by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my dab in the middle of it.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a program tonight. We're going to start off with Greg Reese, and he's going to give us some ideas about how they want to treat anti-vaxxers up in Canada. And then we're going to close with Amazing Polly at the end that will give us an extended 15 to 20 minute lecture on the similar subject of these anti-vaxxers in Canada. But we've got to focus on sometimes these outside countries to see what they're going to try to do here internally in America. But anyway, here we go with Greg Reese, and then we're going to follow that up with David Icke. What he's saying was that our protocol, our COVID-19 protocol, was managed by the National Security Council. But here we go first with Greg Reese on this anti-vaxxers and the psychology and these crazy vaxxers, anti-vaxxers. What are we going to do with them?
The Canadian government in British Columbia is trying to pass legislation that will recreate how oversight bodies regulate healthcare and alternative medicine. Certain details of this legislation are undisclosed and will remain so until the government passes it into law. But what we do know about Bill C-36 is bad enough. This bill gives the government of British Columbia the power to mandate vaccines for any illness the government so chooses. It gives the government the power to censor anyone who challenges their narrative on anything, allowing the government power to seize an individual's property, fine them for up to $200,000, and throw them in jail. It creates a system of classification wherein the government decides who has good character and who doesn't. It redefines the meaning of informed consent. And while it has not been made official yet, the Canadian Psychiatric Association is now targeting everyone who refuses the dangerous mystery vaccines, labeling them as mentally insane, an age-old tactic of tyrants. Throw the dissidents into mental asylums and medicate them.
And you've talked about how they recommend, you know, perhaps psychiatric medication or something for people that don't want to take a vaccine.
So this has come out recently out of the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario. The college sent out a letter or a memo to all the doctors in Ontario suggesting to them, now so far they're not mandating it, they're just suggesting it, that any of their unvaccinated patients, that they should consider that they have a mental problem and that they should be put on psychiatric medication. So far, it's just a suggestion, but the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario should not be making these kinds of suggestions. This is extremely unethical, and this is a very, very slippery slope. If they're suggesting that people who wish to have bodily autonomy and don't want an experimental vaccine, that there may be something mentally wrong with them, that is a very, very dangerous slippery slope that we're on.
This is what the website of the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario says. It says, quote, "It is also important that physicians work with their patients to manage anxieties related to the vaccine and not enable avoidance behavior. In cases of serious concern, responsible use of prescription medications and or referral to psychotherapy are available options. Overall, physicians have a responsibility to allow their patients to be properly informed about vaccines and not have those anxieties empowered by an exemption." So my verdict is, wow, yes, this is in fact a true claim. This is what the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario is telling doctors, that if a patient has declined the COVID-19 vaccine, they are not to quote unquote empower that patient with an exemption, that the declining of the vaccine is automatically labeled as an irrational anxiety. And the recourse for that in the eyes of this medical organization is prescription medications and or psychotherapy. They want to drug you to trick you into taking the COVID vaccine.
Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Coming up next is David Icke has a report on how they were treating people over in China on this zero tolerance. Anyway, here we go with David Icke, and boy, he has some good insights. But he also tells us about who was behind the protocol of COVID-19. He says it was National Security Council. Here we go with David Icke.
U.S. really does capture where this is coming from. U.S. COVID response taken over by National Security Council in March 2020 to impose pre-prepared lockdown plan, evidence shows. In previous articles, the writer says, I discussed the probability that Deborah Birx, the White House Coronavirus Task Force coordinator, alongside with Anthony Fauci, was not a representative of the public health agencies, but rather was appointed by the National Security Council. So the writer says, I now have proof that this was indeed the case. I have also uncovered documents that show, as of 13th of March 2020, the National Security Council, NSC, was officially in charge, security agency, of U.S. government COVID policy. Starting on March the 18th, 2020, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, brackets evil, under the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, evil, was officially in charge of the U.S. government's COVID response. And the writer goes on to give the details of how that can be shown to be true. And an astonishing government document dated March 13, 2020, reveals that United States policy in response to SARS-CoV-2 was not set by public health agencies designated in pandemic preparedness protocols, but rather by the National Security Council. What is the National Security Council, it asks? According to its website, the NSC is the president's principal forum for considering national security and foreign policy matters with his or her senior advisors and cabinet officials. It's a scam. The whole thing's been a scam from the start. And this is a story. And the reason it's important is that if you want to see what's planned for the West tomorrow, then look at China today. And they've got this zero COVID policy, which is just destroying the modicum of freedom that existed before. And the headline says, take a rare glimpse into China's zero COVID madhouse. And the Western world has been given a rare, intimate inside look at the confines of a Chinese COVID-19 concentration camp after Financial Times Shanghai correspondent Thomas Hale was ensnared by the President Xi Jinping's zero COVID regime. It's not that Hale had tested positive. Merely being designated as a close contact was enough to sentence him to 10 days of confinement on a secret island camp identified only as P7. So what he's doing is describing here how PCR testing, not testing for the virus, is almost a daily ritual, and people, testing booths are common on many street corners, he says. And because of this QR code connection, connected to the internet, etc., they can in real time track people. And so he went into a bar and just left and went home. And apparently someone who'd been at the bar then tested positive. And via the tracking system, the authorities knew that this guy, Hale, the journalist, had been there too. Hale had won some kind of terrible lottery. On the day he was in the bar, there were only 18 cases tested positive with a test not testing for it in all of Shanghai, a city of 26 million people. But after a few days after his bar outing, the authorities called to confirm he'd been at the bar. The next day, a caller from the Shanghai Municipal Center for Disease Control and Prevention alerted him that the authorities were on their way. Hale was about to be, quote, taken away, an expression Chinese use to describe this phenomenon. And then he was told by the person at the hotel he was staying at that he couldn't leave. Then came the men in hazmat suits, escorted him to a deserted hallway and onto a bus driven by another bloke in a hazmat suit. And then he goes off into quarantine in what was basically a shipping container. And that's where he was for 10 days. There was no hot water, no shower, unopened duvet, small pillow, a toothbrush, one tube of toothpaste and roll-up mattress, roughly the thickness of an oven glove. Now, that's what's going on in China all the time, every day. And that, you know, I was asked a question this week in an interview, why are China doing this? Well, because they're setting the blueprint, as indeed the whole Chinese system is, for being played out across the rest of the world.
This thing has been a hustle. This COVID-19 been a hustle from the very beginning. Anyway, we've got a report, Balenciaga, given by Alex on this this child porn thing. And this is just a terrible. They've apologized now, Balenciaga, but they put that stuff up in detail. So we're not going for it. We're not believing some of the things that they're saying, but we have to say, well, they did apologize. But anyway, here's Alex explaining what's going on.
Fashion label Balenciaga gives us a window, a doorway into the religion, into the power cult that rules our planet today. The occultists and so-called fashion designers, as well as filmmakers, celebrated by one of the top fashion brands in the world, profiting tens of billions of dollars a year, is at the heart of Aleister Crowley, black magic, human sacrifice, torture, and the destruction of innocence. This story has taken the internet by storm, and the world is awakening. This story is 1,000 times bigger conservatively than WikiLeaks and the entire Pizzagate scandal that was 98% true. But the corporate media, New York Times, CNN, focused in on a pizza place that did have some of the art but did not have a dungeon to then try to discredit everything else that was in the WikiLeaks documents. We're about to go into this huge, breaking, developing story now.
InfoWars, the most banned network in the world.
This is part of a larger trend, and the trend is this. Adults crossing the line, and it has always been a bright line, into deep involvement with the sexuality of children. And here is a high-end retailer promoting kiddie porn in an ad on Instagram, and nobody notices. There's no boycott, there's no front page New York Times editorial against it. And of course, Instagram let the advertisement run, endorsing kiddie porn. And by the way, if you have an alternate explanation for what this was, let us know. A child with a teddy bear in a bondage outfit and a Supreme Court decision striking down a kiddie porn law displayed on the table? What is that? Are we jumping to conclusions? Don't think so.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have never done anything like this before at InfoWarsStore.com. But as a thank you to our great audience supporting us over the years through thick and thin, we are giving away a free gift. That's right, a free gift with every order right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Good till December 1st.
Our story starts as most of these investigations do. Just regular people on the internet, namely Twitter and Instagram, noticed that Balenciaga, ahead of a Paris fashion show, last week posted images from a new photo shoot with what appeared to be depressed, drugged-out children holding bondage teddy and panda bears. Panda bears and panda eyes, again, are a code word for people that have been seriously tortured in dungeons. Look it up for yourself. But there were the children standing on beds with all of this different accoutrement in front of them in bondage outfits. And in part of the same shoot, they showed a purse on the desk, and under the purse were court filings from over a decade ago, Ashcroft versus the Free Speech Coalition. And in that case, the Supreme Court ruled that you could produce synthetic child porn, that as long as actual children weren't raped, you could, under the First Amendment, depict children being raped, tortured, and even murdered. So as Internet sleuths began to go to their official website of Balenciaga, they found even more. That's when the fashion designing company pulled thousands of images off of their website and issued an apology, claiming the whole thing was an innocent mistake. This is their coming out, their externalization of the hierarchy. In the types of ancient black magic they are practicing that go back to Egypt and even before, it is critical to not just conduct your rituals in private or secret, but as you build towards your societal takeover, you then must have a moment of emergence or revolution where you force the, quote, transformation of humanity by shocking humanity using what is nothing but ancient forms of trauma-based mind control. Whether it's Maria Abramovich or Michael Bormans or countless others producing the similar so-called art, they are all in league, openly working together and being celebrated by everyone from Arnold Schwarzenegger to Jay-Z to Barack Obama to Prince Charles. They all pay homage, and including, in many cases, buying this art for millions and millions of dollars as a form of tithing to their satanic anti-human cult. From a societal perspective or a social Darwinistic angle, it's easy to understand why the ruling class is promoting such a satanic predatory system and trying to externalize the method to the general public. They must break our will. They must break our spirit. They must train us to accept the most horrible, barbaristic things like sex with children, their torture, and even murder. Because if we will put up with our young being attacked, if we will put up with the system coming directly after our children, then they know they've won. They've broken our will. They are openly working in concert to condition the public not to value human life, not to stand up for each other, to be selfish, to be corrupt, to think that evil is funny, so that we can all be isolated and picked off one by one. This is the heart of the New World Order transhumanist takeover of the world. The World Economic Forum, the United Nations, Extinction Rebellion are all lockstep with the corporate media, Hollywood, the fashion industry, and leftist leaders across the planet teaching humans to hate ourselves, teaching us that we're bad for the earth, teaching us that we should have forced euthanasia, teaching us that we should kill babies up until 9 months and even after they're born, teaching us that transgenderism and mastectomies of little girls cutting their breasts off and little boys cutting their genitals off isn't something out of a Clive Barker novel, but something that's altruistic and loving and brought to us by the psychological, biomedical, big pharma combine for our own good, when all of it leads to destruction and genetic death, when all of it leads to depopulation. They are purposely making the world ugly. They are purposely trying to depress us and isolate us for total control. And they publicly admit that's their plan. All of this is designed to engage in complete dominance or physical, psychological, and spiritual assault on the body. The shots, the transgenderism, the mutilation, the abortion, the infanticide, the forced euthanasia, all of it is this death cult planting its flag of victory on us and saying, we control the future. We control your children. And we're openly going to celebrate not just your death, but your children's death in your face, and there's nothing you can do about it. But there is something we can do about it. They are desperate. The world is waking up to them. That's why they're trying to accelerate the revolution of revelation of the method so we become desensitized before we fully awaken and bring this death cult to justice. The reason they hate me, the reason they hate InfoWars, is the same reason they hate you. They see your spirit. They know you're good, that you love God, that you love children, that you love justice, that you love prosperity and freedom and security. And that stands in their way of total, absolute domination of our bodies, of our bodily autonomy. This is the transhumanist revolution against every man, woman, and child on this planet. What can we do about it? We can understand the psychological warfare. We can understand the history of trauma-based mind control. We can educate others, and we can withdraw all our support from Hollywood, big tech, and a system that is trying to force this down our throats. But first, we have to cry out to God to give us discernment and to lead God and direct us to be leaders in our areas to stand against this evil. Because as the Bible tells us, when the enemy comes in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord lifts up a standard against it. And once evil is confronted, it will always flee in the end. Again, as the Bible tells us, the wicked flee when none pursue. And they are now surely going to flee because we are in pursuit. Just last week, Elon Musk attacked me and implied that I was the devil. And he quoted Jesus when Christ said, "Suffer the children to come to me. It is better for you to tie a millstone around your neck and throw yourself in the deepest ocean than to harm one of the children." Think of the evil of that. Just a month ago, he was dressed up as the devil's champion, as Baphomet on Halloween, with his mother and other women dressed up in the similar black robes that this cult loves to adorn themselves with, pointing his finger at me and saying, in the words of Jesus Christ, that I have affronted the children and that I have attacked the children. But the reason this cult hates me is because I see them and I know who they are. And I am rallying the public worldwide against their entire anti-transhumanist system that Elon Musk is helping to lead. So if you want to stop these people, learn how they operate. Learn why they fear you. Learn why they're trying to break your will. And don't blacken your heart and just become desensitized to all this evil. Let it hit your heart. Let it hurt your heart. And let it energize you to cry out to God and to become more empathetic and more loving. And then God will lead, God, and direct you with the Holy Spirit in ways you've never known to be able to expose peacefully and lovingly these corrupt devils and bring them to justice so that our children will no longer be molested, attacked, tortured, and even killed by this cult. I'm Alex Jones. I want to thank you all for your support. I want to say great job to everybody on the internet spreading the truth, because the awakening is accelerating and exploding, and we are on the march. The satanic empire is on the run. Now share this critical emergency Thanksgiving report.
Next is a report. I mean, that's a very evil thing going on out there on this child pornography. We've got to stop it. We've got to fight against it. But anyway, coming up is an interview with Bob Baer. He's on CNN. It had to do with Twitter. And it was critical of what Elon Musk is going to do and how he's handling censoring and so forth and so on. But it's the same old propaganda. But you'll hear that we should go back to the Twitter protocols and not entertain anything new that Musk wants to do. That's basically what you hear towards the end. And it's a bunch of bull. But here we go with that interview.
It's a move that's raising some serious national security concerns. New Twitter owner Elon Musk says that he is going to begin restoring previously banned accounts next week. That includes users banned for threats and harassment. Musk announced the decision after conducting an online poll. He tweeted, quote, "The people have spoken. Amnesty begins next week." And then in Latin, "The voice of the people is the voice of God." Joining us now is CNN intelligence and security analyst Bob Baer. Bob, thanks for joining us. We hope you're enjoying the Thanksgiving holiday. I'm curious to get your reaction to these accounts being reinstated.
Well, Boris, I can tell you one thing. Putin is going to be all over Twitter. If there's no regulations on this, fake accounts, spoofed accounts, the rest of it, this is a great opportunity for him. And so when he's talking about the popular voice, Musk, he's really talking about Russian intelligence. You know, the Russians are waiting for something like this. They need a propaganda campaign against the United States and against our support for Ukraine, and they're going to be all over Twitter. I guarantee this, supporting the far right plans, demands to stop arming Ukraine. You just wait.
Bob, I'm curious to get your thoughts on the counter-argument that I've heard to this, because a lot of folks say that there's not really that many Americans on Twitter, but big picture, that kind of misinformation, that kind of influence campaign can have a big effect, right?
Well, it cascades. If you put up disinformation, which the Russians will put up, it'll cascade everywhere. It'll cascade in India. It'll cascade in Europe. It'll appeal to the European far right. It appeal to the Chinese, and you'll see this stuff just appearing everywhere. You just need one piece of disinformation that's sort of half believable, and it will go a long way around the world and really truly affect our policy.
And it gets more and more challenging to discern what's real and what is, you know, misinformation or disinformation, with deep fakes and with the sophistication by which some of these influence campaigns are developed. How do you discern what's real versus what's fake, even, you know, in light of that sophistication?
Well, that's why the pre-Musk Twitter had 7,000 people going through these accounts. You can pick them out with algorithms. You can pick them out by looking at them. You can check IPs and the rest of it, and you simply block them. And it's not right. And, you know, this freedom of speech is just nonsense, because you can't go into a movie theater and yell fire. It's against the law. And what Putin's going to do, and the Russians, is they're going to use this as a vehicle to save himself in Ukraine. And, you know, whether it's going to work or not, I don't know. But we're going to see, as soon as these restrictions come off, we're going to see the Russians all over it, as I just said.
So if you had an opportunity to offer a piece of advice to Elon Musk or to counsel him or simply to send him a message, what would you say?
I'd say this libertarian nonsense is destructive to American national security, and he has got to reinstitute the same restrictions that were on Twitter before he bought it. There is no other choice.
He did announce that he plans to roll out a new color-coded verification system next week. Do you think that that effort will help prevent misinformation or mock accounts from putting out falsehoods?
I hope so, but his record so far isn't very good.
Bob Baer, we got to leave the conversation there. Always appreciate the time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course.
You're beginning to catch on out there, because you're a very smart listening audience. But the propaganda is over and over again that Russia is the bad guy and they should have not gone in. I do not support them in that invasion of Ukraine. I think they got suckered into that deal, but they should have never done that. But with that, setting that aside, you hear the same old, that is Russia and actually China. And coming up next is a excellent, you could say, interview that that Maria Bartiromo had, okay, and it gets into things that that you don't normally hear on Fox, because Fox is involved in financials and so forth, and what you're not going to hear too much is criticism of some of the financials. But she gets into the financials of Sequoia Capital, which is heavily involved through their Sequoia Capital China fund in China. And she says that it could very well be a national security a threat to the United States. And there is a committee in Congress investigating Sequoia, but Sequoia Capital is not cooperating and not divulging anything. They go through some kind of publicity, you know, company, or, you know, to you know, go back and forth with the committees and so forth. And even they replied to Maria Bartiromo through some kind of a publicity, agency or something. But anyway, this is, her interview that she had just recent, well, it was last week on her morning program. Here we go with Maria Bartiromo.
The greatest long-term threat to our nation's ideas, innovation, and economic security our national security is that from China.
And that was FBI Director Christopher Wray testifying last week in front of the Senate Homeland Security Committee on the national security threats facing America today. The Communist Party of China representing the single biggest threat, according to Christopher Wray. Join me right now, one of the people who worked on the House Intelligence Committee investigation into China, along with then-Congressman Devin Nunes. Colonel Derek Harvey is here. He was on the National Security Council in 2017. Also with us is Brian Costello, whose background is in international finance. Gentlemen, it is great to have you both here. We so appreciate your time this morning. And Colonel, I want to begin with you. We keep hearing the FBI tell us how big a threat the Chinese Communist Party is to America. What can you tell us about that investigation? Devin Nunes actually broke that news of his investigation on this program 3 years ago. Where did it go, and what can you tell us about it?
Oh, thank you, Maria. I'm glad to be here. Chairman Nunes has always been focused on the Chinese threat, and I led an investigation into the role of China in trying to influence, manipulate, and coerce a range of companies across almost every business sector, to include academia and entertainment. The intelligence community, whether it's DNI, CIA, FBI, are all very concerned about the role that China is doing to try to influence American politics and policy from the national level down to the local level. So we were trying to understand what is the scope of what China is doing to try to influence American companies. We were particularly concerned about the role of one company in the venture capital arena that seemed to be the prime example of how China uses its influence, and that company was Sequoia Capital.
Sequoia Capital, one of the companies that you were looking at, and this one in particular, you told me that you sent them notice. Did they get back to you? Tell me what happened when you reached out to Sequoia.
Well, we were concerned, and we laid out our concerns to Sequoia leadership. And we sent them about 28 questions about the role of their leadership, their interactions with Chinese Communist Party members, and the fact that some individuals that were global stewards of Sequoia Capital were of particular concern given their intersection with Chinese Politburo leadership in China. The activities of what Sequoia was financing, civil use, military use, high-tech, biosciences that had dual civil-military benefits for China was directly undermining American national security and American economic interests. We never did get a response from Sequoia Capital. We got responses from dozens of other companies, but Sequoia Capital did not respond to us.
Brian, talk to us about what you know about this. We did speak with the PR manager of Sequoia Capital. He said he has no idea about any investigation. But, Brian, we also know that Neil Shen is one of the leaders at Sequoia, and you say that he is the sole delegate representing the venture capital industry in the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference. Tell us more.
Yeah, Maria, thank you and good morning. So Neil Shen is a member of something they refer to as the CPPCC, which is the top political advisory body in the Chinese Communist government. And what the people in the CPPCC do is they sit down yearly with the top members of the Politburo, the Standing Committee, and then they also meet quarterly ad hoc to sit down and advise strategies. You know, I stumbled across this back in 2018 as part of civil litigation. I'm not a politician. I'm a business guy, brought it to the attention of the government. It was very concerning that America's top investment firm was actually employing a direct advisor to the Politburo.
So we spoke with Sequoia Capital, and they told us that Neil Shen has nothing to do with Sequoia Capital, but he runs Sequoia China. Here is a statement that the PR firm gave us who represents Sequoia. Neil Shen has no involvement with Sequoia Capital's U.S. investment or business decisions. He manages Sequoia China, which is a separate legal entity, and he has never shared non-public company information with any government and would honor confidentiality if ever asked. Your reaction?
Yeah, you know, when I read that, it has as many holes as the Spies Who Lied letter that they read when the Hunter Biden laptop wasn't real. You know, the Sequoia principals are public figures. They speak all the time, so their story around Shen's involvement with Sequoia's involved from, hey, we're the top investors in China to, well, Sequoia's an affiliate to now, there's no involvement whatsoever with Sequoia. I will tell you, Maria, when the Trump administration banned TikTok, Sequoia publicly took the exact opposite position, which is the Sequoia's ownership in TikTok, which was around 10%, and Neil Shen is a board member. Their position was the exact opposite. It was like, hey, these are owned by U.S. entities. And in an intelligence report, it even referred to Sequoia as the U.S., Sequoia China as an affiliate of the U.S. company.
I mean, look, he is a real rainmaker. He's very well known, Neil Shen, throughout venture capital and technology, Colonel. He has a recent focus on biotechnology, manufacturing, signaling a little bit of a pivot to different startups away from just generic technology. Your thoughts on what he's trying to do here? Is this one of the ways that the Chinese Communist Party has infiltrated American business?
Well, we think it is, and we're very concerned about it, and that's why we hope that the Securities Exchange Commission and the Department of Justice would pursue investigations in these areas. We think that Neil Shen's role, and by the way, he figured prominently on their web pages, identified as a global steward for the company on the board, and he spoke very publicly about his access to American information and how that would benefit China. So now whether the Sequoia leadership is witting or unwitting about the role and the threat to American security because of what they are doing in China, we don't know, but that is worth pursuing. We know that the committee, as well as the FBI, was very concerned about this, but there's been a blockage at the senior levels of DOJ and the SEC.
Why is there a blockage at the senior levels of the DOJ, Brian? What are your thoughts? We should also point out that isn't it true that there was a major investment in FTX, which is the company that we're all talking about right now, which has suddenly $2 billion in investor money has disappeared?
Yeah, the Sequoia principals themselves, Michael Moritz and Doug Leone, as well as two of their portfolio companies, Citadel and FTX, are responsible for $150 million, or just under $150 million, just in the midterm investments. So their political clout is huge. And this is an exclusive for your show. And in February, I was interviewed by the FBI and the DOJ related to a number of securities fraud claims and allegations that I had uncovered as part of my civil litigation. And it was very clear to me the Department of Justice and the FBI had certain areas they wanted to go near and certain areas they wanted to avoid.
Well, I mean, that's a good point, because for the last 4 years, and certainly under the Trump era, all we heard about is Russia, Russia, Russia. And yet now we understand money transferred around China. Are they getting paid? Why would they not attack the number one adversary of America and stop this infiltrating of American business? Real quick.
You know, even worse, Maria, after I met with them in the beginning of February, 2 or 3 weeks later, the DOJ initiative was ended. And if you look, you know, groups like the American Civil Liberties Union and Stanford and Yale were the ones kind of driving it. And Sequoia has penetrated those organizations with significant donations from the principals.
Donations. That is exactly what I was wondering. Brian, Colonel, we have to continue this conversation. We will do so. And we hope you'll come back in the coming weeks to continue. Thank you very much for
that exclusive, and for laying it all out.
Brian Costello and Colonel Derek Harvey. We'll be right back.
Maria Bartiromo is pretty well clued in. She's not awake on a few key issues that I won't even, you know, discredit her on or criticize her on. Because overall, she's really trying to do the right thing from what I can tell. And so she really, really gets into some of these key issues. And she knows about the false accusations on Trump when he's in office about concerning Russian collusion and all that stuff. But Fox has done a really good job, and Tucker Carlson has done well in some of these areas also. But Russian collusion thing, Sean Hannity really led the charge on that. So I would have to commend him. And Laura Ingraham also. Tucker Carlson, Maria Bartiromo, all those people, Devin Nunes when he was in Congress and he's heading up this Truth Social thing now for President Trump. There was news recently of him meeting with a rapper, you know, and West, you know, and West brought someone with him and that they've identified as a white supremacist. I mean, it goes on and on, you know what I mean? But anyway, they're not letting up. Here's what's going on that I see. If you want, you know, my opinion, pretty level-headed, even-handed opinion. They won't let Trump in to the White House. There's no way they're going to let him in. And they'll do everything they have in their power to keep him from proceeding to regain the White House again, because I think he's out to square the match, you know, to upend the wrestling match and throw him out of the wrestling match, so to speak. So they're fearful that he could acquire power and use that power against him. So they've already mobilized the rhinos, the neocons, and all those other followers, you know, camp followers, to start sieging Trump's campaign. And they're going ahead and poisoning it every way they can. They're trying to break up Trump's friendship with DeSantis and things like this. And they've got all kinds of different, you know, ways that they're poisoning his campaign already. And I just don't think they're going to allow him in to the presidency. And they probably have, unfortunately, they have the power to do that. Now, getting back to this, this scandal that, Balenciaga that Alex uncovered along with others. I think there were others that uncovered it first. It was a child pornography scandal. That's where their weak point is. And so we've got to go ahead and try to publicize that and get that out to the public so they can begin to understand that this pedophilia thing is the weak link in their chain. And they're at the top of the world order. And we've got to publicize this and try to use our Christian base to try to make some headway. But they control the media left. And so the media left is going to come always down on the right and the alternative. And Alex and many other people that are, you know, broadcasting the truth out there. But the media left is totally in control of these dark forces. And so they're not going to render those conservative right a legitimate, you know, level playing field. But here we go with Amazing Polly, and I'm just going to take this to the end of the program. And she's got about 32 minutes on. I'll give an address on my site. Come into thesecrettruth.com, and Amazing Polly, you'll be able to see her complete program. And she's going to talk extensively, more than Greg Reese did, about this anti-vaxxer program, campaign, you could say, that's beginning in Canada to go against them, much like what the Soviet Union did against dissidents in the Soviet Union that were anti-government or anti-communist. They put them in, drugged them up, put them in these homes, you could say, that were, you know, like jails, and drugged them up real heavily. But anyway, we're going to end this with Amazing Polly, and then I'll put her address up so you'll be able to go to her site. She's done some amazing reports. So Amazing Polly is amazing. So here we go with her.
Hi, and this one's a doozy. I don't mean to fearmonger, but this video is going to be scary, I think, for a lot of people. And what I don't want to have happen is I don't want the information that I'm about to show you to create more hesitance to come forward and speak the truth and be powerful. Because that is exactly what has to happen right now before it's too late. Okay, what I'm going to show you today is the framework that's being built in the background of the Canadian healthcare, in quotes, establishment, in order, I believe, for them to be able to classify political dissent as being a mental illness. And it's actually a little darker than that, because it isn't even political dissent so much as it is dissent from pharma. It's pharma dissent. And, well, I'm going to try to go over it briefly, but I want to show you some other things that are happening also in the way, and a little bit of history as to what went down in the Soviet Union when they used something called sluggish schizophrenia to, it was a bogus diagnosis, but they used it to send people away and to remove all their civil rights to prevent them from getting jobs and this sort of thing. It was condemned by the WHO and the entire global population as being an extreme abuse of the medical system, particularly the mental health system. But the same thing is being put in place in Canada, I believe, and I'm going to show you the evidence starting right now. All right. The first thing is from the College of Physicians and Surgeons, Ontario, and it is a guidance paper put out online to doctors. And there's a section in this guidance paper that says pandemic related practice issues, and they have a question here to begin it. It says, patients are asking me to write notes supporting a medical exemption from COVID-19 vaccines. What do I need to know? I've just taken an excerpt here. It's longer than this, but they talk about how there's so few exemptions from COVID-19 vaccines. The only one is that you've had a bad allergic reaction to one of the COVID-19 vaccines. And I covered this in another video, so I'm not going to go over it. But how do you like that? The only way to get an exemption from this vaccine is if you have a bad reaction to the vaccine. And in their more in-depth policy paper about this, they say you should still recommend that the patient get another brand of the COVID-19 vaccine. All right? So really, right off the bat, there's no way for you to get a medical exemption from this thing. According to the guidelines of the College of Physicians and Surgeons in Ontario. But the part I really want you to look at today is this part down at the bottom. It is also important that physicians work with their patients to manage anxieties related to the vaccine and not enable avoidance behavior. For example, for extreme fear of needles or other cases of serious concern, responsible use of prescription medications and or referral to psychotherapy may be available options. Overall, physicians have a responsibility to allow their patients to be properly informed about vaccines and not have those anxieties empowered by an exemption. This went a little bit viral on Canadian Twitter. And it is starting to be covered in the international media. But, of course, the Canadian mainstream media, who functions as a propaganda arm for the state and for the medical industrial complex, they are not covering this. And what's so bad about it? Well, I hope it's obvious on its face. No, you really shouldn't give your patients exemptions. And if you give your patients an exemption, it's just going to empower anxiety. The better course of action is to give them psychiatric drugs or make them a referral to a psychiatrist. Okay, so that's phase one. And then you look at the Canadian Psychiatric Association's recent training, which they called Delusions, Unusual Beliefs, and Conspiracy Theories, Has the Boundary Shifted? This was put out October 29th, but I'm not positive of the year. Further down on that page, it says, at the end of this session, participants will be able to, one, have a better understanding of how certain political movements have challenged the diagnosis of delusions. Stop right there. You see where this is going. Political movements have challenged the diagnosis of delusions. What does that say to you right there? That people who don't go along with the political ideologies of the day might be suffering from delusions. All right, I carry on reading. Two, have an improved awareness of the extent of bizarre ideation present in certain segments of the population. And three, appreciate the need to distinguish delusions from certain bizarre mass-held belief systems. Now, bizarre is not just a word this writer chose to make his point. Bizarre is a category of delusions. If you look here, in this paper on delusional disorder updated July 2022. They give a list of the most frequently encountered types of delusions. I'll just read the first two. One, delusional jealousy that one's sexual partner is unfaithful. And two, bizarre, a delusion involving a phenomenon that is impossible, not understandable, and unrelated to normal life. And you can see the other ones down here. So you have a typical delusion that someone is obsessed with the fact that their partner might be cheating on them. Well, you know, first of all, as a non-psychiatrist, I have to say, how are you sure the person's partner isn't cheating on them anyway? But the danger here for this moment in history is this second category, bizarre. And that's what the Canadian Psychiatric Association is probably referring to in their training session here, bizarre. Further in this Canadian Psychiatric Association document, it says, in the case, for example, of delusional disorder, preserved function and a relative absence of other psychiatric symptoms can make the diagnostic process particularly challenging. The widespread dissemination and acceptance of poorly supported ideas and beliefs has been accelerated in recent years by social media outlets. This has resulted in a plethora of unusual, at times bizarre, beliefs or conspiracy theories being widely held within the general population. In this workshop, the process of assessing and diagnosing people with delusional ideation will be reviewed, with particular emphasis on the diagnosis of delusional disorder. Some of the limitations of the current DSM approach to the diagnosis of these disorders will be reviewed. Okay, again, we're back to political. This idea that a lot of people can believe false things because of social media. That automatically, because they're on social media, they're false. And they get to categorize certain things as conspiracy theories here. And what is particularly troubling is that they are saying they have problem with the current DSM approach to the diagnosis. So, you know, it's they have these tools to diagnose people, which are their Bible, the psychiatrist's Bible. But suddenly they have a group of people who don't fit that diagnosis. They can't find any diagnosis that they fit. So they're just going to update the diagnosis. Maybe. Maybe. If a whole bunch of psychiatrists come together and try to tell them, your diagnosis doesn't work, let's change it to include this group of people, maybe they will. Maybe they already have because it has been recently updated. So you see the pattern. You're hesitant about a vaccine? Well, maybe you're delusional. Because it's impossible that public health would lie to us. I can't understand why you would question it. And this is unrelated to normie life. Change that to normie life. Right, and then, so your doctor is advised not to give you an exemption, but to consider you possibly mentally ill. And then they'll give you more pills. Ding, 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 pharma wins either way. So, yeah, with the new diagnosis of delusion, who knows where this will end up? And you might say to yourself, well, I'm just not going to take the pill. Fine, let them diagnose me with delusion. They can give me the prescription. I'll even go fill it, but I just won't take it. Unless, of course, these type of compliance tracking tablets might come into play. Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, was talking about this at a recent World Economic Forum meeting. Listen.
It is basically a biological chip that it is in the tablet. And once you take the tablet and dissolves into your stomach, sends a signal that you took the tablet. So imagine the applications of that, compliance, the insurance companies to know that the medicines that patients should take, they do take them. It is fascinating what happens in this field.
So they know whether or not you've taken your pills. And even if they don't have this high-tech solution in place, there's a doctor called Thomas Binder in Switzerland. He's a cardiologist, and he came out really early on speaking to COVID-19, and he was going against the narrative. They busted down his door on Easter weekend 2 years ago, and they put him in a psychiatric facility, and they made him take pills, and they monitor his compliance. They do testing on him regularly.
Because I did nothing wrong. They realized this after 1 hour. There was no threat of anybody. And I was not armed, and I had no psychiatric history, of course. All these allegations of this liberal were wrong. And so they couldn't arrest me. So obviously they tried something else, and they didn't know how to deal with me. So they put me into closed psychiatry. But then they gave me the opportunity to decide: either you stay here in the psychiatric hospital for 6 weeks to have treated this mania, or you can leave and go home and continue to work, but you must take a medication. And I was forced to take a neuroleptic. And whether I took it or not was weekly controlled by a blood check. So these are really Soviet-style, GDR-style psychiatric methods.
This is outrageous. So this is Switzerland. For everybody listening right now, I want you to all know that this is happening in Switzerland, and you were forced to take a psychiatric medication because you spoke out against COVID-19 restrictions and measures. Am I right?
Yes. But of course, these, as I said, the corona insane other side decided I must be corona insane. So from their point of view, this was, of course, correct. But from my point of view, this was completely wrong.
This is very dark stuff, and I'm sorry if it's scary. I want to look at history now about that sluggish schizophrenia diagnosis that they made up in the Soviet Union. This is an article from Medical News Today going over the facts. A Soviet psychiatrist named Andrei Snezhnevsky developed the diagnostic criteria for sluggish schizophrenia in the 1960s. Psychiatrists and doctors in the USSR and some other Eastern Bloc countries used it until 1989, when the fall of communism began. Many experts believe that Snezhnevsky developed the sluggish schizophrenia concept due to requests from the Communist Party. The theory was that anyone who opposed the Soviet regime was mentally ill, because there was no other reason for their behavior. Further diagnosing individuals with sluggish schizophrenia became a tool for handling political dissent. Individuals involved in the publication or distribution of anti-state literature or political activism were targets. Psychiatrists would incarcerate these individuals in mental institutions without any medical justification. Under Soviet law of the time, these people could be isolated in maximum security hospitals or in prison camps. Sluggish schizophrenia was discredited because it had no scientific basis and was a fictional diagnosis. It was one of the infamous diagnoses that Soviet psychiatrists used against political nonconformists. Once they discharged them from the hospital, they would lose their civil rights and be unable to find employment. Using diagnoses in this manner was a form of systemic political abuse of psychiatry and has been internationally condemned. And a little more on sluggish schizophrenia from Wikipedia. They had to have a carefully crafted description of sluggish schizophrenia that established that psychotic symptoms were non-essential for the diagnosis. According to Snezhnevsky, patients with sluggish schizophrenia could present as seemingly sane, but manifest minimal and clinically relevant personality changes which could remain unnoticed by the untrained eye. Isn't that handy? Right? Only our super special qualified experts can tell that you have sluggish schizophrenia. Patients with non-psychotic mental disorders or who were not mentally ill could be diagnosed with sluggish schizophrenia. This is exactly what I just showed you from the Canadian Psychiatric Association.